info, music, signals, news, fun and frolic, and emergency instructions. Fun and frolic, and emergency instructions. Fun and frolic, and emergency instructions.
WGXC 90.7 FM radio for open ears in Accra, New York. My name is Desiree Mwalimu-Banks. I am your co-host along with Grant Cutler, and you are joining us for Radio Soup. We're talking about our third hexagonal prism, where we share with you all of the wonderful research and exploration that we've been doing while in residency at Wave Farm. Thank you for joining us.
Good afternoon. And we're here with our host.
Yes.
The Wave Farm host that's hosting our residency, Tom.
Tom.
Hi,
what's
I'm
up?
Tom Rowe from Wave Farm. And yes, we're here with Desiree and Grant today and trying to find out a little bit about honeybees and EMF radiation, I think, right?
That's correct.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about your background and what got you to this point where you're together pointing microphones at bees.
Both Grant and I are MFA students at Goddard College in Vermont, interdisciplinary art students. And as part of my third semester practicum on bees and the sacred feminine, I researched the landscape of beekeeping in New York City and also in Tarrytown, New York at Fly Honey Farms. And I offered a ritual ceremony dance to the hive. And out of that experience, I became interested in the impact that bees, that both humans and bees have and are experiencing in terms of 5G towers. I read an article by a Tamil scholar, and that article provided evidence about the negative effects of EMF radiation frequencies on living organisms, and especially in and near beehives. And Grant, being the amazing sound artist that he is, he's an interdisciplinary artist himself, I was drawn to his work through what we shared together at residencies. And also, he's worked with some amazing people who my husband's also worked with. My husband is a musician. His name is Mikkel Banks. He's worked with Stephanie Batten Bland, who was also one of the keynote speakers for one of our residencies. So that's how we connected. And that's what brought me to Grant to ask if he'd be interested in helping us to understand what EMF is and how these frequencies are impacting the hives, if they are, learning how to protect ourselves from them and how to heal and restore ourselves back to healthy vibrations.
Yeah, and I guess you kind of summed it up there, but what got me interested once you proposed this project was just the opportunity to, I guess it seemed like a big challenge, and it was a great like learning opportunity because it's, mm-hmm. It's so all the EMF studies that we've been doing this week are so like adjacent to sound studies, which is something I'm big into. And it was an opportunity to use some tools that we have never used before to pick up different radiations in these environments, which was super cool. And these tools output very interesting audio, which we've been able to kind of take a look at. What else? I don't know. I mean, you just dropped the project, and I was like, yeah, that sounds cool. Well, I'm into it. So we've learned a lot. I think that, yeah, this week has been really wild, and I've learned coming in with a very novice amount of information about bees in general. I feel like I've really packed it in this week, so it's been great.
I'd love to add just that something that started out as just a project for my practicum became part of my life path. It really clarified and articulated what I'd like to do in the world as a protector of the water and also as a bee guardian. I've been steering away from that term beekeeping and moving into language that really honors a more bee-centric approach to beekeeping. And I guess I also am offering to this project and to the work that we're doing together, maybe a more esoteric herstory and connection to the bees. And we're actually going to talk a little bit more about that during our broadcast at midnight.
And do you, either of you, do you have a specific kind of early interest in radio or a background in radio? Or?
Oh, yeah. Yep. Oh, yeah. I know that Greg, we were talking about this in the car the other day, actually. Mm-hmm. I grew up in Silver Spring, Maryland, and I grew up listening to...
I grew up in Westminster.
Oh, okay. So, you know, I grew up listening to NPR, and 89.3 FM and 96.3 Howard University Radio. Rocco Blunt was who the late and great Rocco Blunt was one of the DJs for programming at Howard University. And I just grew up listening to all of those sort of that traditional lineup. At a certain time, there was the Quiet Storm. At a certain time, you were listening to jazz. At a certain time, you were listening to the news. And I grew up in the era of like analog tapes. If you really liked something, you actually had to get a tape, put it in the record, you know, put it in the machine, flip it over, press play and record at the same time. And if you really like someone, you know, you put their name on it and you made them a mixtape. My friend Rachel, who lives here, shout out to Rachel Drozdovich, who lives here in Hudson, who's been coming by and supplying us with bee gloves and lots of things. But she let me know that I made her a mixtape and I completely forgot. I was like, I did? And she told me the songs that I put on it. I loved music. My parents are, of indigenous Zambian and East Indian descent. So in addition to traditional Zambian music or Zarian music or music from Bollywood, we were listening to HUR. We were listening to 89.3. We were listening to R&B and soul and a lot of the classics, classic black culture. Classic music that defines black culture. Grew up in a predominantly black neighborhood, and those sounds also informed, that music informed how I shaped my identity.
Yeah, I guess maybe I'll just chime in with a short version too, which is that I grew up listening to a lot of radio. I was telling Desiree about my summers as a kid where I had a job mowing lawns, and I had one of those awesome headsets that was a radio built into the headphones. And we had three different stations, classic rock, oldies, or the top 40. Mm-hmm. And I consumed a lot of oldies, and now I've got kind of a dated knowledge, I think, of music from the 50s and 60s. But there's also a country station, but I've never really had the stomach for country, to be honest.
No? Really? There's some great... You don't like Johnny Cash?
I like... I should say... like
often the radio doesn't play the great country.
The great
yeah,
stuff.
I was going to say... Yeah. The stuff that we would get, maybe the best thing that would be on the country radio station we had was like Garth Brooks.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
It was right. That kind of country
station. It was that kind of country station, which I like some Garth Brooks.
Right on.
Yeah.
I no. Sorry.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry. Exactly.
So then what particularly led you to thinking about bees and this?
Okay. You know, the reality of that is it feels very much like a download. When I'd been tracking Wayfarm for 2 years since actually that same person, Rachel Drozdovich, introduced me to WGXC. And I listened to the 24-hour drone on WGXC and was really, I just fell in love with the station. I fell in love with the programming and I was like, I have to meet them. I want to work with them. And then you had this opportunity to submit proposals for collaborative residencies. And I actually, to be totally frank, I asked the bees. I asked
What did the bees say?
And the bees led me to this article by the Tamil Nadu scholar about the impact of 5G on hives, in and around the hives. And apparently when you, their findings reflect that bees have their own distress signals that they communicate to the other bees in the hive when there's an imminent sense of danger. And I thought that that was interesting. And I was thinking about the impact of 5G on bees and really seeing myself as a reflection of the bee and really wanting to move away from this hierarchical notion of human and animal world and insect. And I learned through the College of the Melissa and some of the Rahiba there that actually the Melipona, the people, the Mayan people of the Yucatan Peninsula do not have a word for bee. It's not, they don't refer to bees as bees or insects. They refer to the bee as royal lady sister. And there's something about all of that and all of these teachings that I've learned through my research and through working with Laura B. Ferguson at the College of the Melissa and learning from her and others that is just one, it's inspiring me to rethink and reframe myself in relationship to the natural world and figure out what those alliances used to be. How do we restore that? And so that's where this came from. It felt really, I know this is going to sound really corny, but it felt like a divine inspiration. And so that's what brought me to that article and then what brought me to
And grip. The timing worked out really well because we were actually supposed to work on a project potentially like a year ago.
That's right.
And that timing didn't work out.
And I was
so
mad.
When this rolled around again, you were like, how about this one? I was perfect.
Yeah.
Let's do this.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
We've kind of had it in the back of our minds for a little while, at least.
To work together.
Yes, but
we not necessarily
know
about this
specific project. Yeah.
Because he's just awesome. I mean, I don't know who wouldn't want to work with Grant. His work is amazing. He's an amazing person. It's been wonderful getting to know you in your way.
And handsome, too. You forgot that part.
Important to mention on the radio.
Yeah.
So you guys have been out nosing around in the flowers all week, now it's time to pollinate the airwaves with what you've learned. So you want to tell your story now, and I'll let you do that.
Thank you, Tom. It's been a pleasure and an honor. Thank you.
We'll see you soon.
See you soon,
Desiree. What would you like to?
There we go. I would love to, if you just give me one second.
Of course.
I would love to just remind our listeners, thank you for tuning in again. This is WGXC, Accra 90.7. You're listening to Radio Soup. I am your co-host, Desiree Mwalimu-Banks, sharing this wonderful space with Grant Cutler, my co-host. Our hexagonal research container, we're calling it a hexagon because there are six areas of research that correspond with the six sides of the hexagon that we have been interested in exploring. That includes EMF radiation using all three devices, if you don't mind reminding our listeners about our devices that we're using.
Yes, I forgot my notebook.
We have the acoustimeter.
We
have the dosimeter.
The dosimeter, mm-hmm. And then the other one
Radex.
Is like a, it measures ionic?
Mm-hmm. Ionic radiation.
Ionic radiation, which mm-hmm. is the bad stuff. Yes, okay,
yes.
Sorry, clearing that up in my own mind.
We also have, that's one tier of our research, live mic recordings. We've been placing microphones in different locations on site here at Wayfarm. That's one area of our exploration. Our interviews with one another and with other individuals, that's another tier. We also have, of course, the bees. The bees have their own tier. And we also have the music. As music lovers and lovers of sound and the study of sound, we have material that has inspired both of us that we've been gathering throughout each day. And then if I'm not missing anything, am I missing anything? Our ecologies, the Wayfarm ecologies, are conversations with the land, personally, because while we're here together, we're also here individually and alone and having our own solitary experiences. So I just wanted to share a little bit about the study that was performed by Alessandro Terenzi, Stefania Cecchi, Susana Spinzante, completed in October of 2020, called The Importance of the Sounds Emitted by Honeybee Hives. And that's what we're going to be getting into. This is the science, but it's also about how these sciences often inspire our passion to learn other sciences, right, that are related or adjacent. This particular study tells us about the multidimensional function of sound in the beehive. And as we discussed yesterday, the beehive is super organized, highly organized, unified, and relational. And what we're hearing in the hive, according to the study, are gross body movements. When we actually have the professional equipment to record these sounds, we're listening to gross body movements, wing movements, high-frequency muscle contractions without wing movements, and again, the pressing of the thorax against the thorax of another bee. So this leads us back to vibroacoustics. And vibroacoustics in the hive supports communication between the bees. And just as a reminder, vibroacoustics is the combination of vibrations and sounds that influence the physiology in living organisms. And the frequency, again, the number of times a vibrating form moves back and forth within a second, measured in hertz, is what we've been interested in. And these signals actually support one another, right? So the amplitude, which is the maximum extent of the vibration detected inside the hive, and then the forecasting of events inside the hive. So when we talk about events inside the hive, we're talking about the infamous woggle dance, right? Which is actually danced in the shape of a lemniscate or a figure eight. And there's also a half moon dance, and both of those dances communicate to other bees in the hive where to go to find water, juicy flower patches, and possible new locations for the hive. And there are certain sounds that are emitted when they're doing those dances through their bodies, through those vibroacoustics.
Can we play a little clip of that, of the creation healing bees?
Yes, just so that people absolutely can get a sense of this. So again, going back to Dr. Valerie Solheim's findings, she has been recording through her research sounds of very healthy beehives in a number of contexts across geographic locations, in an effort to bring bees back into resonance with their own natural hum and to sort of give bees the opportunity to lead that, to self-direct their own healing by bringing themselves into resonance with the sounds of those frequencies. So please do. This is called the Creation Healing CD. And I just wanted to read her a brief little description of what you're hearing, because there are several. And this is directly from her site. It seems to have a repatterning effect on disturbed cells. The hive frequencies appear to superimpose a blueprint of perfect cellular patterning that restores the body to its optimum state of efficiency. It seems to activate stem cells. So for more on her work, visit www.healingbees.org, and you can her work is actually available for purchase and download.
Thank you.
You are listening to the sounds of the Creation CD from Dr. Valerie Solheim's groundbreaking body of work. To learn more about Dr. Valerie Solheim and the book, purchase the book. It's called The Beehive Effect, Ancient Rites, Quantum Principles, and you can also purchase and download these CDs. It's called healingbees.org. So whether you're a beekeeper or not, these frequencies, these sounds, these vibroacoustics have an effect, a healing effect on all living organisms that are exposed to these fields. And I have personally noticed, as I mentioned last night, a difference between what I felt like before I listened to this CD in its entirety and then after. Highly recommended. But let's transition now. I'd love to talk a little bit about this area of research that we have been documenting, which includes the celestial events that are taking place in the sky. When we first got here, I shared this with Grant. There was a crescent moon in the sky, and it passed the Beehive Cluster, otherwise known as M44 in the sky. This is a deep space object, which is quite nebulous to the naked eye. And on Friday night, the night we arrived, which was June 3rd, the easterly orbital motion of the waxing crescent moon carried itself past the huge open star cluster in Cancer known as the Beehive, otherwise the Greek name Praesepe, in the western sky. So after dusk in the eastern time zone, the moon shone a slim palm's width to the right, or 5 degrees to the celestial northwest of the cluster. And folks who were in the west could see the moon somewhat closer to the Beehive after dusk. It was close enough that night to share the field of binoculars. But you can see more of the, you could have seen more of those stars if you hid the moon just outside of their, of your, field of view, if you're in the West Coast. So, Beehive Star Cluster, I thought it was interesting. It made me think about, the movements of stars and how we can listen to the sounds of stars, which also emit very, unique sounds and frequencies based on, their inner structure. And, I'd love to go ahead and play Star Sounds by Brian Eno. And just give you, it's actually by Brian Eno, Garrick Israelian, and D. Neg for the 2017 Starmus Festival. So a little bit of the story behind the music. This is a collaboration between Dr. Garrick Israelian and Brian Eno. And he shared his library of stellar recordings with Eno, who sped up the inaudible sounds of stars so that they could be heard by human ears in an original composition. And Grant and I were, you know, dreaming the other day about being able to go to Starmus. And Starmus, for those of you who don't know, because I didn't know, I don't, Grant, did you know about Starmus?
No.
Before we talk about this? It's a biennial festival, organized around a particular theme related to space exploration. And it features talks, panels, workshops, film screenings, exhibitions, live concerts, and more. And it draws together leading scientists, astronauts, musicians, and artists who all share a love for knowledge and deep space exploration. So I'd love to play you a clip of Star Sounds by Brian Eno and Garrick Israelian.
Thank you.
again, that was a wonderful composition by Brian Eno and Dr. Garrick Azraelian and DNAG for the 2017 StarMiss Festival. Thank you again for tuning in to WGXC 90.7 FM Radio for Open Ears in Akron, New York. I am your co-host, Desiree Molly Mubanks, joined by Grant Cutler. And and now we're going to talk a little bit more about other things that have been inspiring our research. Before I get into astroseismology, aka galactic archaeology, what did you think about that composition we just heard? What were your thoughts about the Brian Eno collaboration?
I mean, I think it fits nicely in Brian Eno's world of ambient music. Mm-hmm. It does feel like the stars moving. Mm-hmm. It sounds like the stars moving. I don't know how to qualify that mm-hmm. exactly, but it feels like large objects floating mm-hmm. above. I don't know what else to say about it. I think it's a really cool project. I like any sort of scientific, like, data sonification projects. They're always really interesting to me.
Absolutely.
And I know that there's a number of folks out there that turn information from the skies into things you can listen to, including mm-hmm. right here at Wave Farm. I'm looking at the Weather Warlock right now.
So cool.
Which is not dissimilar from what they're using to, you know, hear some of the sounds of the stars. Mm-hmm. They'd be in the same general family probably, mm-hmm. but no, that stuff's great.
It's all in the same constellation.
Hey, there you go.
Hey, astroseismology or galactic archaeology, the study of oscillation or movement, fluctuation in stars. What they're measuring is the size, the mass, the age, to levels of precision and accuracy that would be extremely hard to achieve by other means. And what they're looking for are stars that have planets going around them. And so when we, for those of you who are familiar with Kepler, they use the transit method to identify exoplanets. Exoplanets meaning planets that exist in our solar system, beyond our solar system, inhabitable zones. And so they're looking for the dimming of the planet as it passes in front of a star. That's what they're measuring. And inspired by just the idea of all of that, I'd love to share a composition that incorporates the Hubble, NASA's Hubble Advanced Camera for Surveys. It's actually a sonified space composition. And I'm going to go ahead and play that for you now.
Space becomes sonified in this visualization of a cluster of galaxies imaged by Hubble. Time flows left to right, and the frequency of sound changes from bottom to top, ranging from 30 to 1,000 hertz. Objects near the bottom of the image produce lower notes, while those near the top produce higher ones. Most of the visible specks are galaxies housing countless stars. A few individual stars shine brightly in the foreground. Stars and compact galaxies create short, clear tones, while sprawling spiral galaxies emit longer notes that change pitch. The higher density of galaxies near the center of the image, the heart of this galaxy cluster, known as RxCJ0142.9+4438, results in a swell of mid-range tones halfway through the video. Hubble's Advanced Camera for Surveys and Wide Field Camera 3 acquired this image on August 13, 2018.
Space becomes sonified in this visualization of a cluster of galaxies.
Yeah. That was actually you speaking there, wasn't it?
It was. It was me actually reading the instructions, me reading the description of exactly what we were listening to in the sky.
And there's more. Where did you find that?
That was on the NASA website.
NASA website.
For the Hubbard Camera 3, a specialized camera that they launched into space. The Hubble.
Hubble.
And we will go ahead and include that information in our archive for you to visit. And so these fields, you know, these fields of study relate to, we were talking about the constellation of other areas of research that are connected to this. When we speak about helioseismology, for instance, we're talking about the study of stellar pulsations from the sun. It's something that I've never heard of. That's Same. What's interesting about this. As artists, we're taught that there's art, and then there's science, and then there's whatever else. But actually, there's so much overlap, and that's one of the things that drew me to this residency is the idea of transmission arts. That there is an art to being able to communicate and transmit information the way we receive it, the way we share it, the way we are able to connect to. Into other sources of experience and communicate that or convey that to other individuals. It's very new. Yeah. Some of it is new. Some of it is new. Some of it feels familiar. But as someone who's worked with sound primarily as your medium, how do these other studies inform how you're moving forward in your practice right now?
Yeah, I think that it's interesting to think about transmission in general and the things that we are able to sense and receive and the many different ways that we receive information and through our senses or through our intellects or however you want to think of it. And it really makes you feel like it is all related. Mm-hmm. And it's all, you think of transmission arts as maybe this tiny little niche thing, but then when you start looking at it, it's like everything's
so
transmission
vast.
Arts.
It's
you know,
so
it's
vast.
Like if you think about all the sciences and all the mm-hmm. different things that artists are trying to communicate and they are trying to transmit to other people. I mean, that's kind of what art's about, right? Is mm-hmm. trying to mediate experience and. You know, that's essentially what a lot of the science is as well, is trying to take something incredibly abstract and make it feel like something.
You know, something just came to me. Tom had asked us earlier in our interview about what it is that brought us to this work. And part of what it is for me is wanting to make the invisible visible, mm-hmm. wanting to make things that we can't see or necessarily feel in a visceral way felt and seen. And that's why, you know, the whole branch of semantics, not C-Y-M-A-T-I-C-S, semantics, the science of visualizing audio frequencies, became so interesting to me. I learned about a semiscope through Dr. Valerie Solheim, which makes the periodicities in star sounds visible. So as these wavelengths on the surface of the water periodically appear, they learn how to make those sounds visible. We were looking at some of the work of Nick Stanford, that sound piece, the video that we saw of the amazing body of work where he actually experimented with a number of different musical instruments and substances, natural substances, to actually make visible the audio frequencies.
Right. And that's a really cool thing that people should go look up, because he's got a number of videos that demonstrate the way that waveforms interact.
Absolutely.
And they're very pretty and they're very geometrical and amazing, and it seems like magic, but it's really just the way that
this is how our universe
is
actually
works.
Moving.
Yeah.
And everything seems very static in these solid states, but it's not. Toward that, I'd love to leave our listeners. Well, first, can we have like 30 seconds to shout out some people? Mm. How do we feel about that?
Of course.
Okay. I'd love to shout out some of our listeners who tuned in last night, including Jennifer Walrad, who is also a fellow G5 cohort with me at Goddard College. And I'd love to shout out Rachel Drozdovich, who also tuned in, my husband, Mikhail Mwalimu-Banks, Dylan Rex, another amazing interdisciplinary artist who also works with sound and video, G5 cohort. And of course, the College of the Melissae and all of my bee sisters who are here. Amazing beekeeper, Bonnie Banks, Ali Pignon, and many others. Did you have some shout outs?
I guess I'll do some that I've already been shouting out, but I would like to thank my good friend Peter Bregman again.
Yes.
Who has helped me understand a lot of the science behind these concepts that we're working with. And he's very patient with me, which is wonderful. And I'll shout out to my wife, Allegra, who's been supporting me all along here.
Absolutely.
And then, of course, the good folks at Wave Farm who have made this all possible. And I guess the folks of the region.
So the folks of Akron, New York. But of course, yeah. I'm going to go ahead and one more time acknowledge that we are on the First Nations lands of the Munsee and Mohican tribes in Akron, New York. And we give thanks for the ancestors and the Black Indigenous ancestors that made a way for us to be here in this space. I would also like to shout out my lovely sons, Chosen and Darshan Walimu King. And I hope Kung Fu was great, Darshan. So let's end with a sound clip from Matthew Barney's 1999 Crim Master Cycle 2 film with an original score composed and orchestrated by Jonathan Bepler. If you'd like to support Jonathan Bepler's work, you can download this music for $12 at jonathanbepler.bandcamp.com. And you're looking for, again, Crim Master 2. And for more on the Crim Master Cycle by the artist Matthew Barney, visit www.crimmaster.net. And again, it's been a pleasure. Tune in at midnight for our last hexagonal prism, Prism 4, where we begin to introduce the mysticism and the elusive sort of artful metaphysics of bee shamanism and bee priestessing.
Yes. Just stay tuned in the whole time. Don't even turn off the radio until midnight.
All the way. We'll be back. There's quality programming, radio for open ears, WGXC, Akron 90.7 FM. Thank you.